Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 86 of Slamfire Radio for December the 4th, 2014. And do we need to say the date every time?
You don't have to, but it's written down, so I don't know. Maybe some people listen, you know, I wonder what they did on the 4th of December, you know, and then now they'll know.
I don't know. Suppose. I was thinking more like the year.
Everybody right.
Yeah, but whatever. Anyway. I'm Owen.
It's too late. We've said the year. So maybe next week okay. We won't. It'll depend.
Keep people guessing next week to know what year it is next week.
Right. It's just something extra to say, really.
Right.
And you know, okay. On these shows where we have, you know, maybe light on the topic, we've got to have more things to say. So yeah, let's leave the date in.
Okay.
I'm Matthew. And Trevor is incommunicado. That's not true.
Jumped ship again.
Trevor passed on coming on the show today. Wait. Oh, that pause there was unfortunate, wasn't it? There was a comma there. There shouldn't have been. No, Trevor's got PC issues, political correctness issues. No, I'm kidding. His computer's not working. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. That's too bad.
I tried. I said, you know, I can call you on the phone. He's like, nah, audio quality sucks on the phone. If he doesn't give his listeners 100%, he doesn't want to give them anything. So that's either he loves you listeners that much, he wouldn't want to give you anything less, or he's tired and cranky and needed a night off. That's, you know, one or the other. Boy, he's going to cut me next time he sees me. Trevor, yeah, we'll see you next week, I guess.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, he was off the week before, wasn't he? Yeah, it was just you and me then, too. That was the famous coffee episode. I'm happy to report I just finished a coffee about a half hour ago, so this could turn into the coffee episode take two.
Well, I did say go get yourself a triple-triple so you could be awake for the show.
Right, I was falling asleep earlier, but now I'm not.
Good.
Good according to who?
Good according to me, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Well, you got to stay up late and record and edit. And do all that.
Yeah.
So what'd you do with guns this week?
I went crow hunting with you.
Oh, right. I remember that.
That was last that was last Saturday. That was like almost a complete week ago. It was right after we recorded last week's show almost. And I was down at your place for pretty much the day on Saturday, and so we thought it was a beautiful day. My goodness.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, maybe around -5 or so. It's beautiful
was
sun.
Was it that cold?
It didn't seem like it because the sun was so bright. Obviously the sun was bright. It was
the middle of the day.
It was the middle of the day. There was like hardly any wind, and so the heat really accumulated on you quickly. You could really feel it. But I think it was still fairly cold. When we were in the shadows, it was still a little nippy. Not too bad, but anyway. Yeah, that was fun. I've never, you know, I've gone crow hunting before, but not like dedicated, okay, let's, you know, do this. Let's just do crow hunting. You know, usually when I go crow hunting, it's, well, I'll go rabbit hunting, and if I see a crow, I'll shoot it too, kind of thing. But we went out dedicated right after crows, and it was fun.
Yeah, we had some success.
We did, yeah.
I mean, not necessarily in birds on the ground, but we did find a lot and successfully call on a bunch of them as well, so.
Yeah, and you showed me some better calling techniques too, which was nice. I've just been blowing into my crow calls. Sometimes I'll just do the crow call myself. I can do it with my voice, but I've been using the crow calls because they do sound a bit better. And I've just been blowing in them. And we have the identical crow call, and yours sounded different from mine. So I'm like, oh, you've tuned it or something. No, you said that you use inflection or something like that, and basically you use a bit of your voice when you blow in it, and it makes it kind of raspy and lowers the tone a bit. So.
Yep. And I wanted to demonstrate for the listeners the difference, but
he can't one of the short people, call.
One of the short people that lives in my house has run off with my crow call, and now I can't find it. So
one of the short people.
In fact, I think the shortest of the short people in my house has run off with it. So anyway, I wasn't able to do that.
We'll save that demo for next week when Trevor's here. We just won't tell him before you start the demo, and you'll just start blowing away. He'll be like, "What the heck?" Of course, now he knows.
The show, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Surprise ruined, just like that. Good one, Matt. Oh, dang it. Anyway, it was good. And you said, you know, we didn't have success in terms of birds on the ground, but we did get a bird on the ground.
Yes.
You took one out with your 12 gauge. It was it wasn't that far away. I guess it was, I don't know, probably a total of
40, 30.
Yeah.
It was straight up, so it's hard to judge when they're straight up like that.
It is. Yeah. But yeah, you hit him pretty good. He crumpled and hit the ground, and like you said, we did call in quite a few. We went, you know, whenever we found a flock of them. What we did is we were just scouting out in the truck, and whenever we saw a flock or a quote unquote murder, we saw lots of murders last weekend. Every time we saw a murder, we would just go to the sort of the next place where there was cover, you know, a clump of trees or something, and we'd pull a truck up past it so the crows wouldn't see us stop and get out, and then we'd go back into the trees and then just kind of find a good spot where we had a good vantage point and then just start calling, and then sooner or later they were flying right over us.
Yeah, so. Yep. It's a little bit challenging just because you've got to try to judge, you know, you've got to balance being close enough to the crows that they can hear your call, but yet avoid, you know, houses and, you know,
yep.
other
well,
things
and,
like
and
that.
Avoid so. Stopping too soon, because if they see you stop and get out, they're they're not dumb. Crows are really smart.
That's right.
So they'll just be like, yeah, no.
Yeah, excellent eyesight as well.
Yeah. So anyway, there was one particular flock I remember. It was by that farm, and we were a ways away, and I wasn't expecting them to come, but they did. And I was impressed that we actually, I remember I was standing in a kind of the edge of the forest, and I was looking between the branches, and I could see this crow probably a half kilometer away sitting in a tree. And I told you that I could see him. And so, you know, you blew a few calls, and he kind of looked around and kind of ruffled himself and hopped to another branch and told you to call again. You called again, and, you know, sooner or later, he just jumped off the branch and started flying over. he'd come a ways and then circle back. He's circling back, and you'd call again, and he'd start coming back towards us, and he'd turn. Call again. He turned again, and eventually he came right over top of us, and we didn't get we did get a shot off on him, but we missed that guy. He got away from us, but it was still cool. It's cool to call him in and cool to have fun doing that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and it kind of relates to a little bit to our topic, our main topic that's coming up, just because it was wintertime. So.
It was wintertime, yeah. So, anyway, that's pretty much all I did. I haven't been to the range. I haven't been shooting. I've had my guns out and fondling them a little bit, but I haven't actually gotten out and shot them. I've just kind of been messing around with them. We had a new addition to the house, taking care of a friend of ours' cat for a couple of weeks here, and so...
Oh, you have my condolences.
Oh, my goodness. It is terror. adding a fourth into, a set of cats that's already used to themselves and have a... Oh, my goodness. They all hate each other now. I was expecting the three to gang up on the one, but no, now it's every cat for himself. Doesn't matter which two cats meet in the hall, there's a fight. And I'm usually the one that ends up bloody out of it. So I've been tempted to use my guns, in the house on the cats. But so far I have refrained from doing so. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of kept me on my toes around the house a little bit. But anyway, that's pretty much all I did. So what did you get up to?
Well, I didn't do a whole lot either. I just am kind of playing around with that SKS still. Well, it's going to go good. I just have to find the right tools. I took off a little bit of the material on the inside of the receiver just so that the mag can seat in properly.
Right.
But I need to find something for my Dremel that is a tight radius to get into the corners. I don't have anything small enough to get tight into the front corners where the should be.
Aren't there like little tiny, like it's almost like a little ball file? It's just a, it's almost the same width as the same diameter as the shaft, and it's just.
I don't know.
Like
I don't
that work. You just don't have anything.
Well,
like that.
I don't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. I do have one little thing like that, and apparently it wasn't for metal.
So you did have one, but now you don't.
And I don't know if the receiver metal in the receiver would be pretty hard, and I don't know how.
I would think
like,
so.
It would have to be for carbon, you know, pretty like high temp steel. So
yeah.
The bits like the sand, like the grinding bits or whatever they're called, they work good, but they just, I don't have any tiny ones, anything really small to get in to the corners.
Yeah, they're too big to get in there. What about just using like a regular file? Is there just no way to do something like that by hand?
Yeah, I just need to get right into the corner. There's no room for a file to move back and forth.
Right.
In a 90-degree corner. So anyway, so I got to do a little more searching around Woodstock, see if I can find some stores that have some bits or something I can potentially use.
Well, I know the Canadian Tire up here has an entire cabinet stock full of Dremel accessories, and it's got everything you can imagine. I wonder if putting a drill bit in there.
I tried that too.
That didn't work.
Wouldn't even hardly scratch it. It's pretty hard stuff.
All right then. I say good luck.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It doesn't need to be. I don't need to take a lot off. It's just enough that it won't quite sit in there. But anyway. So I was playing around with that while I was working in my shop. I have about 3 projects on the go out there right now. So
nice.
And I bought a shoe organizer today for my gun safe.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, if your guns aren't wearing the right shoes, then you know what good.
Well,
are
that's
they?
Right. Well, I just want to be able to accessorize with my guns. You know,
right?
Did
make
my gun look fat?
Does no, that? Huh. All right then. So what are you doing with the shoe?
Well, I've got all kinds of stuff kicking around my gun safe. I mean, there's magazines kicking around, empty magazines, stripper clips laying all over the place, holsters laying all over the floor. And it's just all over the place. And it just drives me nuts because you try to get in there and get something out and you're kicking stuff with your feet. And anyway. So I said, well, I could use some of this vertical space. So I went and bought, and it's just made out of cloth, and it's just one of these hanging shoe organizers. So it hangs on the wall, and each pocket fits a shoe.
Okay.
And it's got 20 pockets on it. So on the right hand side of.
So it's like a cloth thing.
Yeah.
Not a typical shoe organizer where it's like a rack that you put in the bottom of your closet and you arrange all your shoes on it.
No, see, I don't have a lot of square footage in there, so this actually hangs on the wall. I have a blank wall on the right-hand side of the safe when you open the door.
Did you like see an ad for this at late night TV and like, sort of as seen on TV kind of thing?
No, this insanity was devised in my own head. But they're a little bigger than an AR mag, than a 30-round AR mag. So I can fit like 3 of them in to one pocket, maybe 4 if I really jammed them. So they work pretty good for that sort of a thing. And like I say, they're just hang on the wall, and I've got one set of 4 that has sort of rifle, extra rifle mags, and then another one that has extra pistol mags, and then the second from the bottom, I stuffed their various holsters and things like that in them, and the bottom has some locks and just random stuff that you want to keep with your guns,
right? But you don't want to just laying around, so you've got some.
Don't want
to
just laying around, and I don't really have a dedicated gun room, for this. I have where I have my reloading equipment on the completely opposite end of the house, and so if I want to pack a gun into a gun case to take to the range, like let's say my AR, and I want to lock it up, well, I don't want to go all the way to that room on the other side of the house just to get one thing to come back. So I tend to keep a lot of stuff in my little gun closet / safe / room.
Right.
That's related that I would use at the same time, and so I just needed a place, a way to organize it. So.
Well, that sounds like it should work nicely.
And I already have like on the back side of the door, I have a rack that hangs, it clips on the top of the door.
It magazines on the top of the door, not clips.
Yeah, that's right. And it has, I think it would be for like hanging coats or
Right.
I don't know, stuffing them in your closet, whatever.
Yeah, it just kind of loops over the top of the door.
Yeah,
and
it loops
fits
over
in,
the top.
And yeah.
Has a bunch of pegs in the back. Well, I hang, you know, like...
Yeah, you hang all your pistols on there through the trigger guard, right?
Yeah, exactly. I have my plate carrier hung on there, and I have like my Beowulf upper sits on the top bunch, and then all my earmuffs and things like that go on there.
Well,
so it's kind of trying to utilize vertical space and you know, just only so many shelves you can put in something like that. So.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so I did that today, actually, and that's about it.
Hmm.
I haven't really done any shooting other than what we did on Saturday, so.
Cool.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to get out this week and do something interesting then and have something more to talk. Well, we'll have like a week of Trevor, 2 weeks of Trevor to catch up on next week, so that should keep us going for a little bit too. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
All right, well, let's go on to upcoming events and news. We have a few things. This year's charity shoot is going to be the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. And we've kind of got a lot of stuff going on with the charity shoot. It's going to be on June the 20th, and it's the fifth annual. That's kind of scary, actually.
Yeah, getting up to five.
Yeah.
It's scary because none of us can count past potato, and I'm pretty sure potato was after five. And so I don't know what we're going to do, you know, next year or the year after, because we're going to be out of numbers.
We'll just call it the 5+1.
The 5+1. There you go. Well, eventually it'll be 8+1, which is the capacity of a 1911, right? So,
sorry, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong about this other part. There was, we were supposed to make an announcement last week about last year's charity shoot, and that we kind of forgot.
Yeah, we completely forgot about, basically. So yeah, no, we missed the big announcement that we were going to share last week, and so maybe we'll share it this week.
Maybe we will. Should I?
Go for it.
Okay.
Do you know what it is?
I'm hope I got this right.
We'll see.
So there's been issues getting in contact with the people we were doing the charity shoot for last year that we were going to donate the money to. And so the decision has been made to just simply roll that money over and donate it to this year's charity, which, like I said, is the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation.
Well, you almost got it right.
Almost got it right. Okay,
that's one of the options. So you're right. We can't get a hold of who we were going to give the money to last year. We have no contacts for them. It sadly just didn't work out. But it's okay. We still have the money. We're going to.
It's okay.
Give it.
We're going to Cuba.
No. We're going to Cuba. Slam Fire Vacation. Thank you, listeners. No, absolutely not. That money is still going to charity properly. Every penny of it. And what we want from you, so that's one of the options, is we can roll it into next year's charity shoot, and that $1,640 would go to the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. Now, the reason why we've picked this charity is it is very near and dear to the heart of the current president of the Dalhousie Gun Club, the Rusty Goose County Gun Club. And so, sort of to thank him for being so cooperative with us, allowing us to use the range yet again, for the charity shoot, we thought, well, let's have him pick what our charity is going to be, and he picked a very worthy cause, so that's where that's going to be going. So that's one of our options. The other option is, we would like to hear from you, the listener. Do you have another suggestion? Is there another place you'd like to see this money go to? And if so, let us know, and, you know, highest vote or whatever will win, and we'll send that money over to whoever it is you think that money should go to. Obviously, the people who donated the money will get the highest say, but we'll take suggestions from anybody. So where do you want your money to go? Let us know, and we'll send it over.
All right.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yes, I didn't know about that other part of it, but that's
yeah,
right.
It's because we didn't pull you in on the loop there. We were like, well, whatever. Owen's like
that,
at work or something.
I'm totally used to that with this show.
See, here's the thing. It's a three-host show, and we decided from the beginning it was you need two out of the three votes, and that's the way we make our decisions. So if two of us agree, automatically, that's the end of the discussion. It doesn't matter what the third person
says. They don't even bother telling the third person.
No, Trevor and Owen decide something. I'm like, what? Or me and Trevor, or Trevor and Owen, you know, just, oh, that happened? Yeah, well, two of us decided. All right, then. I guess that's that.
Yeah. All right, so that's everything with that. And the,
you know, that being said, Trevor's not here. We could make a lot of decisions in his absence right now.
Yes, we could.
And there's nothing he could do about it. We could have some fun with that.
Yes.
A dedicated 1911 corner. Dedicated segment to SKSs. What's that?
I thought that could be, you know, like the new logo.
A 1911.
Yes, 1911 and a Milstead.
In an SKS stock. Well, because he loves SKSs so much, too.
Dear.
Yeah. All right.
I think we better move on.
I think so.
News. NDP will revive the Longren Registry with some changes. Now, this is not actually happening.
That's the headline.
Yeah, this is the headline. This week, Thomas Mulcair says that a new Democrat government would revive the Long Gun Registry, minus the flaws that made the original registry so controversial. The NDP leader says his party is committed to ensuring police have the ability to track firearms, but it's still working out the details of how to do that without running into the problems that plagued the Liberal instituted registry that was scrapped by Stephen Harper's Conservative government. Farmers and hunters strenuously objected to the registry, but Mulcair says requiring firearms to be registered is no different than the obligation to register a car or license a dog. And he says duck hunters don't need assault rifles unless they're planning to shoot a pterodactyl.
Pterodactyl,
sorry.
Yeah, the P is silent.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
That's okay.
Liberal leader Justin Trudeau says he would not revive the gun registry because it was too divisive. He says there are other ways to reduce gun violence, including the classification of restricted or prohibited firearms and the criteria necessary to purchase a gun.
We already classify restricted and prohibited firearms. There's already criteria necessary to purchase. The guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's help reduce gun violence by classifying restricted and prohibited guns. You've already done that.
Yeah, exactly.
He probably just means putting more
firearms into that those categories.
Maybe, but updating the list. They'll just have to get another issue of Guns and Ammo and pick out the scary ones again. So they did it the last time. I don't think we're in any danger of seeing the Long Gun Registry come back, mostly because I don't think we're in any danger of the NDP ever forming a majority government.
No.
I just can't see that. I could be wrong, you know. I'm not gonna call what's gonna happen in the next federal election, but
I am. You are.
Right now, it's neck and neck. I mean, for the last couple of months, it's been Liberals ahead by a fairly good margin, but the Conservatives are pulling ahead again, and it is sort of neck and neck right now with the NDP in a distant third place. And I think what's happening is the Liberals really irritated a lot of Canada in the last election, and they lost hard. But now that they have a new quote-unquote figurehead, a cute one, apparently, according to the girls, I think that's where they've made their comeback. But the NDP, they're just going to slide back into third place where they've been for the last few decades and where they're just going to always end up being, I think. I just don't think they have the traction to keep pulling ahead. So,
No, it really was a reaction vote with their...
It was... we're not voting you in, we're voting them out, is what happened with the last one.
Yeah.
So.
And I think just the combination of that swing back from NDP back to Liberal and the shiny pony, that's the only reason the Liberals are having the success in the polls.
That's right.
Opinion polls so far. But every time Justin Trudeau opens his mouth, he puts more votes for the Conservatives. So
I think so. or at least send some votes over to the NDP. And I don't care. You can split that vote as much as you like because that helps us out. But, yeah, speaking of the Long Gun Registry, he says, working out the details on how to do it without running into the problems that were in there. Well, I don't know how you could do it any more effectively than you did last time, because last time it was a simple registry, which is exactly what we had for the handguns. It's not like it was... You know, it was a boondoggle in sense of wasted money, but that's only because any registry is wasted money. You can't effectively register anything without spending a lot of money doing it. You just when the government's involved, you just have bureaucracy over bureaucracy over bureaucracy, and that means people, 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 and that means money, 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 and It just
unless you're going to start charging for each transaction. Unless you're going to start charging.
Yeah, they said they were going to do that with the last one. Hmm. But then they didn't, which was good because that would have irritated a lot of people.
Well, it would have been, outrageously expensive. I mean, the rate, you think about poor Trevor.
Oh, my goodness, Trevor would be double booked by now. It'd be crazy.
Like, you just, it would put the firearms industry in some ways to a screeching halt because people just wouldn't get rid of guns or buy new ones. I mean,
yeah, if it costs $50 to register a gun, you know. And he says here
selling a 10/22 or, you know, something that's, you know, not really on the high end of. I mean, it's one thing if you're selling a $3,000 gun to go, okay, $50 more isn't a big deal, or
but yeah, but I'm not going to buy a $100 gun if I have to pay another $50 just to register it once I get it. Now it's a $150 gun, mm-hmm. And that makes no sense.
Yep.
He also says it's no different from the obligation to register cars or license a dog. Well, yeah, no, it's completely different. The difference between registering a car and licensing a dog, those are taxes. You register, you pay a registration fee on your car as a tax to help pay for the roads. That's what registration is about. I mean, that's why we pay that. Same thing with dog licenses and cat licenses, that, you know, in the cities. It's a tax. You do it not so that the people know what kind of dog you have. They don't care what kind of dog you have. They don't care that you have a dog. They just care that you have some money and they want some of it. And so registering firearms is not the same as registering cars or dogs. It's not a tax, especially if you're not charging us to do it. If it's a free registry, which it was last time, and the only reason it would have to be free again is that would be the only way that people would even come close to complying with it. I would think that they would almost have to pay us to register our guns at this point. Because I know a lot of people who have said, if the registry ever comes back, I can tell you there's a bunch that won't be registered in my house.
Yep.
So, you know, I can't condone such actions, of course, because that would be illegal. But
and at the same time, and then we've made this point on the show before, that you can still own a car or own a dog without having them registered.
That's right, and it's not a crime. It might be a misdemeanor. It might be a fine if they catch you.
But if you used it, yeah. But I can buy a car and drive it around my property, on my property, and without a license.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, no,
registered.
I had this discussion with somebody last week actually, and they're like, "Well, no, it's no difference from registering a car." And I said, "Yeah, it is. You can buy a car without registering it." He says, "No, you can't." Yes, you can. You can buy a car without registering it. How do you figure? If you go into a car dealership and buy a car, they're going to transfer the car into your name. Okay, that's fine. They transfer it into your name. It's registered to you. Do you legally have to keep that registered? You can cancel the registration anytime you want on a car. And there's nothing that they can do about it, and they don't even care as long as that car does not go onto public roads. Mm-hmm. So as long as it stays on private property, there's no registration needed. Again, it's a tax to help pay for the roads. Gun licensing, gun registration doesn't do that.
No, the government's not running our ranges, and we have to pay a registration fee.
See, now that would be at least understandable. I was trying to think of some sort of example where, you know, that registration fee would. But yeah, that makes sense. If we had government-run ranges, I shudder at the thought.
Yeah, me too.
But if we had government-run ranges, and it then cost us $20 to register a rifle, and that money went to the upkeep and the maintenance of the range facilities, well, now it makes at least a little bit of sense. Yeah. It's almost the same thing as registering a car then, because your money is being used for something that benefits you as a gun owner. But that, you know, that's the only way it would make even a little bit of sense. They're doing it because they think it's crime prevention and allowing police to track firearms. That's a bunch of horse crap. It doesn't do either. It does not prevent crime, and it does not allow the cops to better track firearms. All guns have serial numbers. That's how you track them. You don't need it in a national database to read a number off the side of a gun.
And the more sinister side of things is they also know that where all the guns are, if the government ever gets to the point of deciding they want them.
That's right.
Or don't want their citizens to have them. So.
Yeah, I mean, if they have a list of everybody who owns guns now, it's real easy for them to go take them away. And like you said, that is the sinister version of it. That's, you know, and the other side of the of our spectrum, the anti-gunners, that's what they want. I mean, eventually they want us all completely disarmed, and so they're doing this, I would say, at least some of them intentionally to you know, they're passing it off as something, oh, it's just a way to help, but really, no, they're doing it to take our guns away. And
even if they say they're not, that history, you know, shows that that is sort of the inevitable chain of events.
Yes. Yeah. Just look to history. So, yeah. Because every time there's been a massive gun confiscation, there has been registration that preceded it. It's not cause and effect. I mean, that doesn't mean that just because there's a registry, your guns are going to get confiscated. It just means that there's definitely a correlation there that, you know, you have to have one before you get the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing I want to comment on here is he says duck hunters don't need assault rifles unless they're planning to shoot a pterodactyl. Well, I would say even an assault rifle isn't good for shooting pterodactyls because they fly. You still need a shotgun. You know, assault rifles might be better off for like T-Rexes or like those little raptor things that run around and hiss at you. I've been watching Jurassic Park too much. But I think I'm making light
first
of it, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to pick on the assault rifle thing again, but
that's kind of where I was going too. He's saying this probably to try to be funny, but it's a little needle there because he's using the word assault rifle, and he's also saying in a sort of a backwards sort of way, well, it's actually not even that backwards, that he wants to get rid of all assault rifles. And now that's fine if he's using the actual term, the actual definition, because that means a selective fire. You know, that's fine. That's we already can't own those. But I know what he's talking about. He's talking about ARs. He's talking about VZ-58s. He's talking about SKSs. He's talking about pretty much any semi-automatic firearm is what he's talking about. And I don't want him thinking that, and I don't want people thinking that, you know, these are something we need to get rid of, because they're not. There's nothing wrong with what we have.
So, you better.
Yep. Anyway. Yeah, I just... Mr. Mulcair talking gibberish again, and Mr. Trudeau not far behind.
All right. Well, let's move on to the main topic.
All right, then.
This week we thought we'd talk about winter hunting, because
and
it is now winter officially in Canada.
It's not officially winter yet, no.
But there's snow on the ground, and it's cold out, and...
So we call it winter, Canada, even though it's still just late autumn. Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Right.
I'm going to mute my mic so that I don't...
I was just gonna say that in some places in Canada it's still hunting season, and it's still hunting season everywhere, but some people are still deer hunting and things like that. So we thought we would talk about winter hunting, how to dress, guns, things to maybe carry with you, and just ammo, various things. So we thought we'd start off with sort of how to dress for winter hunting.
Yeah, first of all, we're sorry for everybody down in the south. You don't get to experience this awesomeness that we call winter. And by we're sorry, we mean we hate you and are envious, because some of us do like winter up here. It's actually not that bad. But those of you, you know, you live in California or something, you're listening to the show, you're like, yeah, how do I hunt in the winter? I just go out in my shorts and t-shirt like normal. You know? So we're sorry that you had to listen to this, but maybe you'll learn something about Canada, eh?
I don't know what the temperature is now, but it was -8 degrees Celsius when I came inside.
Which isn't that bad.
Which isn't too bad. That's pretty nice.
I was watching a documentary on the Russian taiga actually before the show, and it's actually a really cool documentary if you want to watch it. It's on Netflix. I don't know what you'd search for. Probably taiga. Anyway, it's this village that lives in the Siberian. The outback of Siberia, basically. I don't know if there is an outback of Siberia. I think it's the North Pole.
I think Siberia is the outback.
I think it is. But it was really, I mean, talk about cold. They're like, it warmed up to -33 today. It was surprisingly warm. Surprisingly warm at -33 Celsius, huh? Huh. Yeah, they're used to like -50, apparently. So
wow.
That's chilly. We don't get that. We get like -30 usually, and that's about the coldest we get here. So.
Yeah.
All right, this first one. What are we going to do? Dress?
Dress. Put clothes on. When you're hunting in the wintertime, you need to wear clothes.
Definitely. Dress in layers, apparently. And if you sweat, you're dead. Right? Mm-hmm. Am I right? Do we have any fans?
Right.
Less Stroud fans out there?
Yeah.
So, don't sweat when you're out in the winter, because when you stop moving, the sweat evaporates and cools you that much quicker, and you get hypothermia, and basically you die. Well, you don't have to die, but you probably will.
So, you could. It's possible. Could.
Okay.
I mean, a survival situation, obviously, it's a lot more serious because you can't just say, well, I'm going to walk back to the car now and drive home.
Yeah, and but, you know, in all seriousness, whenever I'm out, just, you know, even shoveling the driveway, it's easy to sweat.
Oh, yeah.
Doing some work. Like, a lot of people are like, what do you mean sweat in the winter? But I go out, you know, when you start, when you go out, it's minus 20 and you got to shovel the driveway. Well, you're bundled up when you go out because, well, it's cold out. But by the time you're 20 minutes into it, the toque's, you know, coming off, the scarf's coming off, the jacket's getting unzipped because you're sweating. And if you let that sweat just accumulate on you, you'll go back in the house and you're soaked. Like, I mean, I've gone back in completely soaked. And it's crazy.
And you get and you can get away with it because you're going back inside where it's warm.
Absolutely.
But if you were to sweat and then be miles and miles from your vehicle or whatever, your house, and you stop.
That sweat's got to go somewhere. That water's got to go, and it will evaporate, and that will cool you significantly.
It'll freeze, and serious. But be smart about your layers. Don't just wear a whole bunch of layers. If you're just wearing a bunch of cotton layers, it's probably not going to give you that much insulation value.
Yeah, so what is the right way to layer?
Well, cotton generally next to your skin, because it does absorb moisture and wick it away and pull it away from your skin. But something like Under Armour is good as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that high-tech stuff.
Yep. I really like Under Armour under wool. I found that to be a really, really warm combination without, you know, and then something for wind over top. If it's windy, I'll put something, you know, some sort of windbreaker or barrier over top of that.
Yeah, that would work really well, actually. The Under Armour keeps the sweat away from your body, wicks it away, like you said. The wool is an amazing insulator, wet or dry. That's something to be noted, too. Wool is a very good insulator even when it's wet. So if you fall through the ice, you know, it can still help you. And then, some sort of, like, nylon outer, you know, windbreaker type coat. Like you could even still have a winter jacket, but have one that, you know, cuts through the wind and doesn't let the wind get through. And you got a recipe for a warm setup there.
I have a sweater that I think it's a Army surplus sweater, actually, that's wool. And I wear that over my, I've hit like on head to toe Under Armour, so it works pretty good.
I should get some Under Armour. I've never even worn Under Armour before, so I don't even understand how well it works. I've always just worn, you know, just low-tech clothing, I guess.
No, it's like a second skin to me, especially the shirt.
Yeah.
I just find working, I don't want to be bulky. I don't want big, thick, heavy, bulky jackets.
Yeah, that
so
is annoying.
Everything, it just makes everything hard. So every thin layer that I can put on that will prevent me from having to have a big, bulky jacket, I will do. So I will wear Under Armour just like a second skin, and then maybe I won't even wear a jacket. I'll wear maybe a t-shirt or another long sleeve shirt over top of that, and then just a hoodie or a sweater or something, and I'll carry the jacket with me in the car, but I might not even put it on just because it's just extra bulk that I just don't want to have to deal with.
And it's true. I mean, dressing in layers like that, you can, even if, I mean, for myself, I can tell you what I wear. I wear a t-shirt and then a long sleeve shirt, just again, just regular cotton. So there's two layers there. I put a sweatshirt on top of that. And then if it's really cold, I put my flannel coat on. It's like a lumberjack coat. And then I put my winter coat on top of that. And let me tell you, I can be outside all day with that setup. And, you know, the winter coat comes off often, and even the wool coat will come off. The lumberjack coat, because, you know, even still just having the two shirts in the hoodie or sweatshirt, that's still, if you're working, still enough to keep you warm without, you know, and that, you know, taking off those two layers allows the wind to kind of go through you and evaporate that sweat while it's happening, as opposed to, so, you know, the Under Armour, yes, it's really good, but just because you don't have it doesn't mean you can't still dress effectively.
No, so that's right.
Just to bear in mind those people who are like, oh my goodness, I can't go outside anymore. I don't have Under Armour. Yes, you can.
And then, of course, then as you move out from your torso and legs, you get into hands and feet and head.
Yep.
Gloves are – this is interesting because I like to wear – when it's really cold, I don't wear like – gloves much. I wear just like mechanics gloves almost all winter.
And those things like have absolutely no insulation value at all.
Yeah, but that's about all I wear all winter.
I was wearing those last week when we were out hunting, and my fingers were just about freezing. And really? You were wearing them, and you were just fine. Yeah, I switched over to my winter gloves recently, and way better. But anyway,
What I will do is, if I need the extra insulation, is I have a pair of like snowmobile gloves, mittens, and I'll put those over top of my mechanics gloves.
And that's a really good idea, especially when you're hunting, because you don't need the dexterity of your fingers when you're walking to and from your blind or your tree stand or while you're stalking an animal. But you don't want to go from really warm hands to flesh in freezing temperatures, because that's a recipe for frostbite, of course. I mean, especially at extended periods of time. But still, it's uncomfortable, especially when you got to hold a gun that's the same temperature as your surroundings. So having a pair of light gloves on underneath your mittens is a great way to keep your hands nice and toasty warm when they need to be, yet still have the protection you need over them and still be able to manipulate your firearm and other things while you're out hunting without freezing your fingers off. So, yeah.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
And then, of course, for boots, it's
good quality boots.
Yeah, you know,
get good boots.
I wear like the Arctic Sport muck boots.
Yeah, those things are awesome. Yeah, I've seen you with those. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be really cold before they stop working. But I'll wear layered socks. So I'll wear again cotton sport socks, and then a pair of woolen socks over top. And then I've even gone so far to wear, if not so much with the muck boots because they're waterproof, but if I have to wear something else for whatever reason, I have a pair of Gore-Tex socks.
Oh, those are the waterproof ones?
So that way if I do step into something that's wet, my boot can get wet,
but
at least my feet are dry, and I wear my wool inside of that so that I'm not having my insulative barrier being damaged by the water. So
right. Yep, good point.
And again, I picked those up at Army Surplus. So
the Gore-Tex socks?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to look for some of them too.
And Matthew, tell us the secret to keeping your face warm.
Grow a beard.
Hairiness.
Hairiness helps. It really does, though. I mean, it's only been the last couple of years that I've been wearing a beard in the winter, and this year so far it's been all year round. It makes a huge difference when you're outside. Yes. I used to rely on having a scarf pulled up over my nose and covering my cheeks and stuff. And when it's really cold, you do still need that. I mean, we're talking minus 20 and below, but above those temperatures, just having a bunch of hair on your face actually keeps you warm. So there's a reason why men didn't shave when they lived out in the wilderness, that keeps them warm. So if you can grow a beard, that really helps if you're out, But then again, I mean, it's not, I'm going hunting this weekend, so I'm going to grow a beard. Well, no, you kind of need a bit more time than that. So it's kind of got to be a lifestyle change for you. go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also run facial hair most of the year, but I also have a couple of schmucks that I usually wrap around sort of like a scarf.
What was that?
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, those tactical scarves.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job. It's not like a full-blown scarf, but it's just something to keep the breeze off so that you don't have the again, heavy jacket. I hate a heavy jacket, and I hate the collars all being all up around my face.
Yep.
So every time you turn your head, it sounds like a rhinoceros just went by.
Yeah.
And, it just frees up my ears, especially if you're hunting. You need to be using all your senses, and it can keep the collars down away, but still not be letting the cold air leak in around the top of my jacket.
Yeah, no, and it is important to note that protecting the flesh on your face is important. So have a balaclava or have some sort of scarf you can wrap around or some sort of face protection, especially if it's windy, because first thing you're going to freeze is the tip of your nose and your ears. If you're out in the wind and the cold, I mean, those are the most susceptible to frostbite, above your neck. So make sure you keep those things covered up if it's cold out.
Yep. Matthew.
Yeah.
Is this a gun show?
This is a gun show. We should talk about guns.
We should talk about guns. So what should we do to keep our guns so they're not
frog lube? Frog lube for sure. Yeah. Wait. Oh, wait a minute. While frog lube is great in the summer, it's not so great in the winter. You want light oil on your guns. In fact, most of my firearms that I use that I hunt with in the winter, I will use Remington Rem oil that's got Teflon in it. So it sprays on as oil, but then the oil will sort of evaporate, but it leaves a Teflon coating behind. So there's nothing really to, because as you guys know, fluids get less viscous. Less viscous in the cold,
yeah.
Right? Because less viscosity is thinner. So yeah, things will gunk up when they get cold. So you want little oil on your guns so that they don't jam up and get all gunky and have sticky actions and stuff. So make sure that you oil your guns lightly.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I was thinking was, I do this for some of my guns, slings. There's nothing worse than it's kind of like standing around in the snow with steel-toed boots on.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're carrying your rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah, your feet get cold because of all the steel. Yeah, if you're carrying your rifle is, you know, a lot of it's made out of steel. And especially if the way you hold it, your hands around the action. Think of a classic Winchester lever action. You grab that where it's comfortable to carry one-handed, and you're right around the receiver, and it's all steel. There's no wood there at all. So remember, your rifle is the same temperature as the environment outside. So if it's minus 20, you're holding on to a minus 20 chunk of steel all day while you're carrying your gun around. That's going to get cold even through gloves. So slings are a really good idea to help sort of keep your hands warmer, because you're not, you know, you can sling the gun instead of carry it.
Yep, absolutely. What else? Scopes. I don't run really much for scopes on my hunting rifles in the past. So Matthew, I'm going to let you answer this one.
There's not really a whole lot you got to remember. Just a couple of things. One is have scope covers, especially if it's blowing snow. The snow will accumulate on your lenses of the scope if you don't have caps for it. And you can get flip-up caps. Those are my favorite. My absolute favorite are the transparent flip-up caps, because in a pinch, in a quick situation, you can actually just pull the gun up and shoot through the transparency of the caps and still, you know, still use your scope. But the more common ones are the opaque ones. Anyway, you just flip those open, and you can also just get the ones that are held on by elastic, the typical ones you would get. But it's important to keep your glass clean. I mean, if snow is drifting into your scope, you're not going to be able to use it when you need it, and you don't want it to be using soaked or possibly gritty fingers and gloves to clean out the snow. You're going to scratch your glass. So be very careful of your glass when you're out there. Also, whenever you're returning to the house or to your truck, if it's warm, water will condensate, the moisture will condensate on cold objects. So your scope is, again, you don't want water condensating inside. I mean, most scopes are sealed, and they're nitrogen purged, so there's no moisture inside them anyway. But it still doesn't hurt to let the gun warm up slowly in the truck maybe before it comes into the house, or just wrap a plastic bag around the scope before you bring it in, and the moisture will accumulate on the bag instead of the scope itself. This was really good for cameras and electronics as well. Put it in something that the water will, it'll be attracted to that instead of on your actual device. It just kind of keeps it from getting ruined. So just something to bear in mind.
Cool.
Very cool. Get it? You said cool and it's a winter topic.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else about that. Because, I mean, again, I don't hunt with scopes. Most of my hunting guns have
iron
open sights.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even iron sights, you got to be careful. I mean, I have pulled up rifles before that has had regular iron sights. Actually, I don't think it's happened with like a traditional notch sight, but it has happened to me with peep sights, where I pulled the gun up and the peep was completely plugged with snow. So, you know, watch your peeps too. And I suppose, you know, it could technically happen on a notch sight too, where you get a bit of snow in the notch and then your gun's useless. So you got to clean that out. It's a bit less of a pain than snow on your scope, but still something to bear in mind.
Yep. Neat. And what about ammunition? I guess ammunition is pretty stable stuff.
Yeah, especially most modern stuff is.
Yep.
The only thing I'd recommend is if you do reload your own ammo, just consider using a temperature-insensitive powder like Varget, something that is advertised as being stable through a wide variety of temperatures. Just you know, if you can get the same velocity at minus 20 as you get at plus 20, so much the better, because your trajectories are going to be the same, your drops are going to be the same. You're not going to have to worry about, you know, different holdovers depending on the temperature.
Yeah. What other things with guns could be very bad?
Snow in the barrel.
Really? Are you sure?
Snow in barrel equals bad? Boom? Possibly?
Yeah. Do you think it really would? I mean, I know if you had it full of water or something and there's no place for the, you know, things to expand, but do you think snow, wouldn't it just go poof out the end?
You try it and let me know. I'll run the camera.
From a distance.
This week on the MMAT YouTube channel, will Owen's gun blow up full of snow? Tune in to find out. It could. I mean, it's not something that I joke around or mess around with. If your gun is full of, if you drop your gun muzzle down and you plug it full of snow, I wouldn't shoot that thing without cleaning it out. If you're out in the woods and you don't have a cleaning rod with you, I mean, that could easily ruin your hunt if you're averse to sticking a branch down your barrel, which I wouldn't recommend. That's probably not the greatest thing you could do.
You might do it with a shotgun or something, you know, something big bore like that.
Sure. And here's something that you have to be a bit careful with, but I have done it. I don't know how smart it was, but I have done it. It was with a shotgun, so it had a pretty big bore. But I dropped it and sort of plugged it up. And you know where I'm going with this.
I know
you?
Where you're going with this.
You just blow the snow out. It can be done. I've done it. That's pretty dumb.
Unload the gun first.
Well, fortunately, it was a break action, and so I was able to blow from the breech to the muzzle. I think that would be the only smart way to do that, although the image of the reverse is kind of hilarious, especially if you consider that warm, moist lips freeze instantaneously to minus 20 degree steel. It makes for a very interesting conversation at the ER. And exactly what were you doing?
Yeah, that's like the Canadian suicide problem.
So yeah. All
right.
I mean, that's an option if you have a breech or a break action firearm where you can get from the breech to the bore, but or the breech to the muzzle. Don't do it the other way, though. That's just silliness. But yeah, just the other thing you can do, a couple things. I carry my guns now. It depends. If it's not snowing, I carry my guns muzzle up. That just makes sense because, you know, if it's not snowing, nothing's going to get down my muzzle. But if it's snowing heavily or if I'm going through the bush, and especially with my shotgun because it's got such a larger barrel opening, I carry them muzzled down. And what that does is it prevents snow from falling in if it's snowing, and it prevents, like, nuts and branches and twigs and stuff from falling down the muzzle, too, as I'm ducking through branches and whatnot. But what it doesn't do is protect you against crouching down and jamming the muzzle into a snowbank as you crouch down. So that's something you got to bear in mind, too. I've trained myself to, every time I go to crouch, I grab the gun and pull it up, you know, across my chest so that it's muzzle up as I go down, so that doesn't happen. But it's something to bear in mind. You don't want to plug your gun up. So I've heard of people using tape. They'll just take a piece
of really good idea.
Scotch tape or masking tape or whatever, and just, you know, put a piece of tape over the end of the barrel. And I've heard people say, well, won't that affect your accuracy? Not at all. That tape is gone before the bullet leaves the barrel. There's so much pressure as the bullet itself is pushing itself down the barrel, that column of air blows the tape off before the bullet even gets to the tape. So that's not a problem. It's a great way to keep debris out of your barrel, and it's cheap. It's just a piece of tape, and it's effective. So something to bear in mind, something you can do.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, not one that I had thought of.
Yep, I've heard of guys using those I guess they're called finger condoms. I don't know what else they're called, but they're really small, rolled up things that you stick on your finger for various purposes.
Oh yeah, I've seen them kind of, instead of putting like an entire like latex glove on,
you can just put it on the finger,
the
basically.
Tips.
Of the glove.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen those. Yeah,
yeah, it's yeah. So
that would work pretty good.
Yeah, you can stick that on the end of your gun too. Of course, sometimes your buddies laugh at you and say, "Hey, where'd you get a set of that?"
From your bedroom. No. All right. What else? Good for wintertime?
Yeah, I think that covers dress and guns. I don't know if there's anything else gun related we'd have to cover. aside from just, you know, just be careful with snow and actions and stuff. But, yeah, I would say the next thing to kind of concern yourself with is to have some sort of small survival kit with you. In the summer, when you're out hunting, or in the fall when it's not terribly cold, you could probably get away with a night or two in the woods,
mm-hmm.
you know, with just whatever you happen to have in your pockets. But in the wintertime, survival is that much harsher. Yeah. I think it's yeah. important to carry at least a small survival kit.
Yeah, I'm always much more careful. I mean, it's regular hunting times, you know, in the fall, I might carry it with me. I might not. I mean, I always have a knife with me, but or three. But
or three, yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to wintertime, if I'm out, I always make sure I have certain things with me.
Yeah.
So
prepare for a night in the woods. You don't need to prepare for a comfortable night in the woods. Just prepare for a night in the woods where you would survive. So you don't need to bring a tent with you and a sleeping bag and all that stuff. But bring the appropriate gear that would help you survive a night in the woods if you had to. You know, mm-hmm. because you got lost, because you hurt yourself, because, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But so what are some of the things we should have in a survival kit? What are some essentials?
Well, right off the bat, of course, like in every kit for any kind of survival, fire, fire, fire.
Yeah, have at least three ways of
three
making
ways
fire.
Fire, yeah.
I carry Bic lighter, waterproof matches, and flint. It's not flint, it's ferrocerium, but you know what I mean, the strike, yep. the sparkers.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three things I carry almost everywhere I go. I've got yeah. those in the truck, and I've always got at least a Bic lighter in my pocket of my pants everywhere I go. I've always got a lighter.
I need to pick up some of those just to scatter around in various vehicles and yeah. equipment. But and my hunting knife, the one I usually carry, is a survival knife, and it has the ferrocerium rod right on the
nice.
Front of the sheath, so you can just pull it out and just scrape it.
Yeah, now, those of you who want to go that route with the flint rods, make sure that you practice using it, because I can tell you the first time I used it, I didn't make a fire the first time I used it, because it took me, you know, it took me a little while to figure out exactly how to aim the sparks, how to build the tinder just right, how to, you know, mm-hmm. make it make fire out of sparks, because making mm-hmm. fire out of sparks is a lot more difficult than making fire out of fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, another thing to note on the Bic lighters is that the butane will stop evaporating and expanding into burnable gas at temperatures, I don't know the exact number, but it's like minus 10 or something like that. Mm. So if you have a lighter in your pocket and it's exposed to below that certain temperature, just bear it, it's not useless, just put it inside your glove next to your hand for a few minutes before you start to light your fire. And that mm-hmm. will warm up that butane enough so it'll actually ignite whenever you spark it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think calories are important because...
Because food,
and in the you know, in the summertime, you can find stuff to eat if you know your plants and berries. You can find something to eat, and again, it's not cold. Your body doesn't need as much fuel. In the wintertime, everything is. Would you say it's at least 10 times harder or 50 times harder?
For what?
Or just everything.
Oh, everything. Like in the
fire
winter,
is harder. Yeah. Shelter is harder.
Well, if we're gonna put a number you know, on it, I don't know. Yeah. 50 is the right number. Probably 47 and a half is where yeah. I would go. No,
everything is so much harder when it's cold and snowy and wet.
Especially when your fingers ache from the cold. You just can't do mm-hmm. anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
So having easy calories is really good. It along with fire, it's not just physical warmth, it's psychological. If you have fire and food, you know, you've got some pretty some basics there as far as what a person needs for living. So
yep.
it's just psychological to know, okay, I have something here I can put in my belly that will give me some energy.
So what sorts of things could you have?
Well, obviously granola bars are a common, easy go-to thing.
It's great, yeah. Granola bars. Yep. You know, some guys will carry a chocolate bar, and that's cool too in the winter, but in the summer it kind of melts.
Yeah.
Granola bars don't melt. So yeah, granola bar is great. I always have a granola bar somewhere in the truck or in my pocket or somewhere.
Yeah, I should tell you about the time the guy at an event once gave us granola bars, and then after we ate them, told us how old they were. that he found in his vehicle.
Yeah. I've got one that's at least 2 years old in the truck that I wouldn't hesitate to eat if I was hungry. If you're hungry, you'll eat anything.
Oh, absolutely. I'll almost eat almost anything when I'm not hungry.
Jerky is a good option. Beef jerky, yep. doesn't go bad.
Nope. High protein.
Yeah, it's high in protein, which is good. And you have some emergency rations called, what is it, Datrex or something?
Yeah, these ones I have, I think it's a brand name called Datrex, but they're just an emergency ration, high-calorie emergency ration, and right. they're dry, they last forever, they're in a little cellophane wrapper, and then they're vacuum-packed into a bigger package. I think this one is supposed to be, I think the packages are like, I forget, 3 days worth of calories or something like that. I forget, but anyway, they're small or lightweight. You just throw them. I can throw them in a bag. They don't really take up any space, but I know that I've got 2,400.
Yeah, you've got some food if you need it. Yep.
Yeah, and they're actually pretty tasty.
Oh, good. I should try some next time I'm there.
Yeah, I've got a package that's been opened that I often will carry around, even carry out to the bear stand. So I'm sitting in the bear stand going, oh man, I should have had, you know, yeah. I should have had breakfast this morning or whatever. You know, you take it out and have a little snack. I mean, it's just nice to have a snack whether you really need it or not.
Yeah. You get the blood sugar back up.
Yeah.
So aside from calories, I think in your survival kit, another knife, and I say another because you should have at least one on you anyway.
Yep. Yep, fixed blade, preferably on you, in either another fixed blade or a folder.
Yep. Yeah. Extra gloves and socks if it's in the wintertime, for sure. Mm-hmm. Once your gloves or socks get wet, it's hard to get them, you know, dry and warm again, so just swapping them out is a good idea. Those chemical hand warmers are fantastic in a survival kit because they activate simply by opening them, and they, you know, stuff them down your boots, stuff them in your pockets, stuff them in your gloves, put them wherever you want, and it really helps mm-hmm. retain your body heat and give you a little bit extra.
Yeah. Did I ever show you my the reusable ones I have?
I don't think you did.
I think that maybe they only last for so long. But
oh, those are the ones. Yes, you did. The crystal ones.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you boil them.
They only last for a couple of minutes, unfortunately. They're not the...
No. These ones lasted, they don't last for hours, but they will last for a couple hours.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. Because Jewel has one here for like lower back pain or something. It helps. Okay. And it doesn't seem to last very long.
Okay.
But yeah, the hand warmers ones, they'll last for 8 hours.
Right.
The good ones, so.
Yeah, no, these last pretty good amount of time, but you can only recharge them so many times and eventually they don't seem to work quite as well after you. Yeah. You do them a bunch, but I have a bunch here that I've never used. They're still brand new in the package.
Cool.
Mylar blanket.
Yep.
Flashlights.
Compass and map. I mean, if you're so inclined, or a GPS, or at least have the background map on your phone. most smartphones have a GPS, so even if you don't have cell coverage, you can still use a GPS function. So just make sure you at least download the map of the area that you're in, so you know at least that you have a backup there. But map and compass, you don't have to worry about batteries for those. So
and then
you know, I guess snowshoes if it's deep snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a survival kit thing, that's just more of a
practical.
Yeah, learn how to walk in snowshoes too before you go out, because it's different. So anyway, I thought that was you know, at least something we should go over for people who wanted to go out hunting, and maybe a bit of a novel topic for our listeners to the south.
Yeah, that's right.
We never think of such things. Curse you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. So we'll move on to some listener feedback. So this first email comes from Sean, who says, "Hi, Slamfire hosts. Just like to say thanks for reading and responding to my last email. I would just like to clear up a few points. I was actually searching for Canadian firearms podcasts. You guys will be happy to know that you are the first Canadian firearms podcast that shows up when I search Google. As for Trevor, like my mom used to say, I love you all the same." Despite his hatred of guns.
You know she was lying, right? You know that.
Despite his hatred of guns with walnut furnishings, 1911s, and the great Russian SKS, I still thoroughly enjoy his viewpoint. Can't say he doesn't have an opinion. You got that right. Thanks for the 22 rifle advice, Trevor. I did manage to find Matt's YouTube channel and watched all his reviews of the 22 semi-auto rifles. I went to my local gun shop on what turned out to be Black Friday. They had a Ruger 10/22 takedown for a very good price, and I also checked out the other rifles. The huge aftermarket for the 10/22 is a big draw for me as well. I like the ability to customize with that platform. In the end, I didn't get either the Remington or the Marlin,
And I also didn't get the Ruger takedown. They ended up having a stainless and synthetic Ruger 10/22 for their Black Friday sale. I got it for a very reasonable price. The little gun is rugged and will be a great addition to my buggo bag. I took it to the range on Saturday morning. Without any cleaning, straight out of the box, it fired 150 rounds with only 3 jams, likely caused by the minus 26 degrees Celsius temperatures. After I accidentally dropped my magazine in the snow, it functioned 100% with the action full of snow. Well, there you go.
That's good. Yeah. It's a Canadian rifle. And it doesn't matter because it's stainless steel, so it's not going to rust.
Mm-hmm. After I got the sights adjusted, it turned out to be fairly accurate, too. Obviously no bolt-action target rifle, but for a semi, it is very reasonable. Anyway, I will stop bugging you fellows now. Just wanted to follow up and let you guys know what I finally got. Keep up the great podcast. I love grabbing the new episode every week. Regards, Sean from Saskatchewan.
Look, you're not bugging us, let me tell you. We love emails like this. And good choice. The 10/22 in stainless is a fantastic rifle. Those 3 jams could be the gun just breaking in. Could be the minus 26 degrees Celsius temperature. I shiver at the thought, and I know that ours is coming. We haven't got to minus 26 yet here, but I think tonight we're going to get close with minus 21. So if I can suggest your first mod for you, it would be to get a Volkwartzen extractor. Very inexpensive. You're talking less than $20, probably shipping and taxes included. You just replace the factory extractor with this. When I did, I went from, you know, probably 95 to 98% reliability to virtually 100%. I could not get that gun to fail to extract or fail to eject. Like, every single time I pulled the trigger, if that gun went bang, the case was out. There was no stove piping. There was nothing. It was always gone. And before, with the factory one, like you did, out of 150 rounds or so, you would get, you know, between 3 and 5 stove pipes, or, you know, it wouldn't extract it properly, or it would hang up on it somehow. And that one simple part change just virtually made the gun 100% reliable. It was fantastic. So if I could suggest that, I think that would make your experience even that much better. Other than that, though, good gun. I think you're going to find that the 10/22s have become a bit more accurate lately. I know they did suffer from some accuracy issues in the past a little bit, but I think they've cleaned that up, and I think you're going to have a lot of good times with that gun. Anything stainless steel is going to be great, especially if you're out and about in the woods with it. You don't have to really worry about keeping it all oiled up and keeping it free from rust. It just won't rust on you, so it's really nice that way. What else did he talk about there? 1911s and SKSs. Oh, yeah, let's talk about that for half an hour so Trevor can listen to us talk about 1911s and SKSs. yeah, cool.
All right. Well, do you want to grab the next one?
Sure. From the Conquistador, Bolivar himself. He says, why, in the name of all that is good and wholesome, did you tell a listener that the 223 cartridge stops being accurate at 600 yards? My goodness, man. I expect better effort from my second favorite podcast. Signed, the Conquistador. I don't remember saying that it loses accuracy at 600 yards. Do you remember me saying that?
I don't remember anyone saying that.
No, I remember saying that it's good out to about 600 yards, but I was more referring to velocity than anything. I mean, if it's accurate at 500 yards, it's going to be accurate at 6, and it's going to be accurate at 7. I mean, bullets go in a straight line, generally. They don't sort of veer off after a certain distance. They're going to keep going. It's just a matter of how much energy do you have left. And I would say probably 600 yards is the maximum distance that you would engage a normal animal at with a 223. So that's kind
that
of where
might be even pushing it. I know the Canadian military, and he probably would know this actually better than I would, but I'm pretty sure they practice with the C7s up to 5.
Is it okay? So, so
if the military is practicing out to 5, you know, you kind of would guess that they're expecting that round to be good out to 5, as far as stopping power or, you know,
right,
not bouncing off of people's chests.
Right, because that's what happens after 500 yards. 223 is just that weak that it'll just bounce. I mean, a good leather jacket will stop it at 500 yards. I'm kidding. Don't go out and let your friend shoot you at 500 yards with a 223. No, I've seen people shoot with a degree of accuracy out to 1,000 yards on YouTube. There are some videos of guys shooting 223s out to 1,000 yards, and they can still hit what they're aiming at. So you can shoot your 223. I remember the email last week. They were asking, you know, 223 or 308. You can shoot your 223 out to 1,000 yards if you want to, but the 308's going to do it better. Yep. So, you know, if you want to shoot
because
1,000
yards. It has more weight behind the bullet, so there's just a little more oomph when it gets there, I think is the idea.
It retains its energy longer, yeah, that's what it's doing. It's got the inertia going for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, Ball. I didn't mean to get you all terrified there that I was thinking that. You were thinking that I was thinking that it went inaccurate at 600 yards. I don't think that.
Because he should know, because he does that with the service conditions. I mean, they shoot out farther than that.
Do they really? Is it past 600?
Well, I thought it was. Maybe it isn't. Maybe 600 is what they usually shoot at. But I remember Ontario Dave. Yeah. I remember him posting some stuff where he was actually shooting up to 800 with his AR.
That's cool.
But maybe that was the exception, not something that was related to.
I'd like to do that, but all the ranges around here, I mean, the maximum one that I can think of is that's close by to me. Well, there isn't any. There aren't any close ranges that go any further than 100 yards. There's one in Florenceville that's going out to 300, but even 300 is not that far when you're talking these sorts of distances.
Yep.
So I'd like to shoot my AR out to, you know, 6, 8,000 yards even, but it just got nowhere to do it. I'd love to just, I mean, there's lots of places I could shoot my axis at that distance because it's non-restricted and I can shoot it wherever the heck I like as long as I'm, you know, not near houses, but I can't do that with my AR.
Yep.
Oh, well. C'est la vie. Thanks for the email, though, Bolivar.
And this was actually a Facebook message, but we're so desperate for emails that we're going to read it anyway.
Yeah.
from somebody named Keegan, who says, "Hey, guys, cool story. I was out goose hunting in Ontario this week."
I love it when they call it that. Ontario. Same with California.
Yeah.
Of course, I was playing a game online with some guy from California. I was like, "Oh, so where are you from?" He's like, "San Francisco." "Oh, California." He got mad. Oh, he got real mad. I had to like hang up and go play in another server because he was angry. So apparently, you got to be careful who you say that to. And just side note,
because if you say it to a commie, they
get angry. Yeah. He clearly was not right-winged. He was definitely left-winged and not happy about it.
Yeah, but he was still okay with, you know, Call of Duty or whatever.
That's right. He was okay with the virtual killing and guns is cool, just not the real stuff. That's not allowed. Anyway, sorry, I digress terribly.
Yes. Okay. He goes on to say, "Just got one the first day, cleaned it, and left the guts out back by our blinds, roughly 50 yards."
So what did he have? Oh, it's a goose. Okay, sorry. Goose, I had to go back and read hunting. What we were talking about here. So he's goose hunting, so he left the guts out back. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. About 50 yards where they have a cleaning and hangout spot. We ended up going back out the next day as we had the hunger to drop more. As I was calling them in, my goose call started acting up and making what I thought was a dying goose sound. So I kept calling anyways. About 30 minutes into the hunt, they started to come to not come at all. But what did come was the biggest coyote I've ever seen. Right behind my blind, about 5 yards from my quote-unquote blind side, and beelined it for the decoys.
I guess you did make a dying goose sound because it called in that coyote.
I was shocked and confused, so I didn't hesitate and shot it with my 3-inch modified choke full of BBs 3 times. He goes on to say, "I was shocked, confused, that furry bugger and all..." No, he shot in...
"I shocked and confused that furry bugger."
Oh, okay, I see what he's saying. And all I was thinking about was how nice its pelt would look on my floor. Yeah, not after 3 rounds of BB. I spanked the first shot right in the butt and it bolted, but I didn't get it. Anyways, thought I would share as it could have attacked me. Good thing I was looking at my decoys, that it thought was a dying call. Would it have even come if my call was messed up? Regardless, I'm bringing my Sub 2000 in my bag from now on. Want that pelt. Anyways, have a good one. Let me know what you have shot killed lately or missed, like I've been doing apparently. Cheers, and PSL about all the commas." He goes on to say it's beside his space button on his phone, and he's,
letting the teachers groan over it as are the biggest grammar police he knows.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you spelled groan wrong. You spelt it like grown, like we're grown up teachers, but it's the other one you're thinking of. That's okay, though.
You know what?
I didn't mind the commas. The commas were, you know, that's okay. I was off the commas this week, but this week it's spelling.
And the joke's on you, because he probably did that on purpose.
He probably did. He just wanted to hear me go off again. That's cool, though. That's interesting, thinking or hearing of a coyote coming in to attack your goose. Did you ever have that happen, Owen?
I've never had a coyote come. I have had deer walk into fields and actually, just out of curiosity, walk up to our decoys.
What's all the noise about, guys?
Yeah, exactly.
We're just eating some corn and bang!
I would caution him, though, about taking his Sub 2000 with him. I'm not sure what the laws specifically are in Ontario, but I know that in some places they have rules against carrying multiple firearms with you. So you have to have only the number of firearms you have per shooter, like for the number of shooters you have.
Yeah, some places and allow you to carry a second gun for different species, and some places don't. So yeah. Look into
that. And you're also not allowed to hunt waterfowl with single projectile.
Or lead.
So you could be in some legal issues that way if you got caught with a Sub 2000 and they would try, you know, they might try to make an argument while you're hunting geese with a Sub 2000 or something. You know, I mean, as dumb as it sounds, it would be possible. So you just got to kind of watch the legalities on that. But yeah, otherwise, that would be perfect.
I had that same issue when I was hunting. I had my deer license a couple years ago when I still had my Savage 24, and it's a 22 over 20 gauge. And so I was bird hunting and deer hunting at the same time. So I had bird shot for the birds. I also had 22 shells for anything that was on the ground. And then I had, of course, slugs for deer. And it's against the law to hunt deer with rimfire. And so I had rimfire shells with me.
Right.
And I'm thinking, if I get stopped, am I going to get in trouble for having rimfire shells with me? And I don't know what the right answer is there. So I just went ahead and did it anyway, because I figured I'd just talk myself out of, talk them out of any sort of fine or charge, because, you know, it's quite obvious that, you know, I'm using the gun for different purposes, and it's a multi-calibered gun to begin with. So, I mean, I'm going to have different ammunition with it for different species, and I'm legal to hunt all of those species. I got a ticket for a license for all of them. So, you know, I think they'd have a hard time charging me with something. If I was just hunting deer and didn't have a small game license, then yeah, I wouldn't have the shot shells or the 22 shells with me. But anyway, yeah, that's something you definitely got to look into. I do know that in Ontario, when you're turkey hunting, turkey hunting in Ontario is allowed to be done with number 4, number 5, and number 6 shot only. And if you have even one shell of 7.5 on you, or number 3, or, you know, any other shot size, then 4, 5, and 6, we were told in our turkey training seminar that if we have that and we get caught by our ranger, a conservation officer, they will charge us with hunting with improper hunting ammunition. So, you know, they said to be very careful that you don't, you know, you might be out rabbit hunting the day before and have 7.5 with you, and then just grab that same vest and go out turkey hunting. Of course, you're not going to use that ammo, but if you just have it with you, they say they're going to charge you for it. So make sure you look into that before you take your Sub 2000 out with you, because you don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, this is sort of similar here with lead shot. Well, migratory bird, so it's everywhere in Canada, but if you have any lead shot with you while you're waterfowl hunting, it can be big problems.
Angry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though you could say, well, I just bring this in case I need to shoot a crow or would I kill, because I have a firearms license, but
yeah,
it doesn't
prove
matter.
It though, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway.
Yeah. Thanks for the email though. That was from Keegan. I don't know if we mentioned that it was from Keegan, but it's from Keegan.
It is the beginning. Yeah. So, the beginning.
I wasn't listening at the beginning.
Anyway, if you'd like to send email to the show, slamfireradio@gmail.com. That's the email. I don't think we say that enough.
We don't say that enough. No, it's a good thing to say. That maybe that's why we didn't get very many emails this week, because we didn't say that last week. So now we're looking for lots of email for next week's show, because Trevor will be back with a really cool main topic. We really want to have to cut it short to get all your emails in.
That's so, right.
Actually, spoiler alert. Remember we were talking about having Rob Forche on a couple weeks ago? I was like, I wonder if we even told him. Well, apparently we hadn't. But he is, Trevor has set up that he's scheduled for next week. So as long as everything goes to plan, we will have Rob on next week to talk about stock building. He builds stocks from scratch, and he's going to tell us ins and outs of some really cool stuff about that and the different firearms he makes stocks for. So tune in next week to hear about stock building. So that should be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. iTunes review.
We have two.
Woohoo.
Yeah, we asked for some, and we got some, strangely enough. Great. So, two of them. First one, I'll read them in chronological order. So the first one came November 28th from 1911 Fanboy, so I can only guess it came from Trevor. And he's just writing in to, I think that's his online name. No, I'm kidding.
It's Is entitled, that how we get iTunes reviews? We just go on and, you know, make new accounts and send ourselves iTunes reviews?
Yeah, we have to make lots of separate accounts, but, you know, just you can get one of those free email addresses. It's cool. No big deal. Right. This one's titled, Love the Show. He says, as the title says, love it. Enjoy hearing about Canadian issues and hearing similar views and ideas. Keep up the great work, and we need more 1911 talk, though. I like the M. Matt YouTube channel as well. Great reviews of great 22s. Oh, no, that's the one I wrote. Right. Dang it. Not the one Trevor wrote. No, that's cool, though. Thanks, 1911 fanboy. We'll try to get more 1911 talk on somehow. I fear that we'll only get that on in terms of jesting and mockery, but we will try to get some more on for you, because clearly you do like the 1911, so that's cool. Thank you for that. Next one comes to us from Hex Basher, and it's titled, or it was sent in December 3rd, and the title is longer than the message. So I'll read the title. The title says, Pro-Gun, don't spare the logical deduction or the common sense. Sadly, common sense isn't so common. So that was the title. And then the comment is, if you don't listen to the show, you are a communist. Just saying. So, you know, you better listen, because you don't want to be labeled a communist. Or, you know, from California, because they don't like it either, apparently. So.
All right.
Anyway, those are our iTunes reviews, and we appreciate them. And thank you very much for sending those in, because they kind of make our day, and we get to read some stuff about ourselves, and sometimes it's good, and it's always good. You guys are awesome. So,
all right, good. Any shoutouts?
Shoutouts, eh? Shoutouts, you say? No, don't have any shoutouts. Do I have any shoutouts? How about I shout out Jason Gallen? He and I have been texting back and forth while he's bored and while I'm bored at work. And so he's been talking about he wants to go to an Appleseed in the States sometime. Cool. And the closest one I found recently, because I've kind of wanted to go to one too for a while, and the closest one I found was in southern Maine, which was like 9 hours away. So I didn't.
Southern Maine is not 9 hours away. Not even for you.
Really?
No.
It looked like it on the Google Maps there. Remember, I'm really? Up in Edmonton.
I know, but I can get to New Hampshire in 6 hours.
No, that's straight across. Maine is taller than it is wide.
No, I'm meaning the southern part. I mean, it's like Manchester, right on the coast.
Okay, how long did that take you?
We can do it in 6 hours.
6 hours, yeah. All right, well.
It's almost 9 hours for you, but.
So basically I'm right, but you wanted to jump in anyway and say, no, there's no.
You're still technically wrong, but.
Okay, I'm still wrong. It was like 9 hours away. I didn't say it was.
It felt like 9 hours. It looked like 9 hours on the map. Until,
it looked like 9 hours for sure. Anyway, it was a ways away.
And then you zoomed in, and it looked even like it was going to take even longer.
Forever. When you zoom in, those distances just get so big. It's crazy. But anyway, Jason, I actually wanted to see if he could come on the show with us tonight. Because he is an avid outdoorsman. He's outdoors all winter, so he would have had some cool insight for our topic this week. But sadly, he wasn't able, but I am going to see if we can get him on sometime in the near future and talk trapping, maybe, or something like that. I don't know. That's all. Lovely. I just got a shout-out for Gallen. So, hey, Gallen.
Yeah, cool.
And I'm sorry. We didn't get any hate mail about it, but I know I was wrong. It's not 2.2 liters in a gallon. It's 3.78. I don't know where I got 2.2 from. I think that's centimeters in an inch. Apparently, my conversion is off. That was last week. We were calling them 2.2 liter.
Yeah, that's right.
It's 3.78 liter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and it 2.2 is pounds to
pounds kilograms. To kilograms. Yeah. Right?
There's 2.54 centimeters in an inch.
That's right. Ah, get them all confused. I do know how much a horsepower is, though. It's the ability to do 550 foot-pounds in 1 second.
Oh,
that's okay. That's a horsepower, apparently. I just read that today, so the number's still stuck in my head.
I thought it was just an animal with four legs.
So, anyway, right. we derailed that one once again.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how much horsepower that train we derailed had.
Oh, dear. So, as soon as you, you know, delete our this show from your podcast.
Yes, we're sorry. We've done it again, haven't we? Trevor wasn't here to rein us in, and so Matthew on Coffee screwed up yet another show. My bad. Mea culpa. That's my Latin for the day. Mea culpa.
Mea culpa.
I don't even know what it means, but people say it. So. Sorry.
Once you're done doing that, be sure to go and join both of our national firearms associations, the CSSA and the NFA. And go over and check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We have a forum that nobody ever talks in, so say something.
Yeah, go say something. I check it, you know, a couple times a week, so it'd be cool to have some sort of comment in there, and then I would be able to, you know, go, way, somebody said something. But anyway.
And go check out the Facebook page, because we are there fairly regularly. Post pictures of your guns if you want. We'll talk about it. We like that.
That's where we got our last email on the show, was from a message on Facebook. Now, I do have to caution you, we don't check that nearly as often as we check our email account. So sometimes if you leave a comment there, it will slide by, and we apologize if that happens. So if you definitely want to make sure we see it, send it to our email account. But you can still send it to our Facebook account. Sometimes we do notice them and put them in like we did this week, especially when we're desperate for more content.
And then be sure to check out all the other great shows on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network. And that's renoviolaoutdoors.com. And they have lots of great shows, mostly dealing with the outdoors. Everything from scuba diving to fishing to camping and all kinds
aviation.
Of stuff.
Aviation. They got an aviation show on.
Oh, do they now?
Yeah, it's called Just cool. Plane Radio or something like that. And it's about some guy who and his instructor, they're doing a podcast, and it's him going through from no experience up to his pilot's license. So it's kind of neat.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, you can hear us on there on Fridays and Mondays. Fridays at 1 and 10, 1 in the afternoon and 10 at night, and Mondays at 1 in the morning.
And that's Atlantic Standard Time. That's New Brunswick time, so you'll have to do the math to figure out where it is in your. Yeah, where you live.
Yeah, we're definitely not doing the math for everybody.
Definitely not doing the math. Definitely not.
Let's take another, you know, half hour and figure out what time that is everywhere in the world for all of our listeners.
Ooh, good idea. Well, I know it would be just add a half hour for Newfoundland.
There you go. Also, be sure to check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. It's the we're saying it's the first international pro-gun podcast network. And
I don't know if we're right, but we're saying it.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Because you heard it on the internet, folks, so it must be true. Every show there is dedicated to protecting rights as gun owners, and so in the U.S. and in Canada. So lots of good shows on there. And that brings us now to the end of the show, where Trevor would normally say,
I'm Ron Burgundy. And what would Matthew normally say?
Hug your guns. No, it takes someone shooting.
And this is what Owen would normally say. This is where I insert the sound of crickets.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.